welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster and Hardwood Paroxysm. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. And today we're talking season preview podcast, and we're going to be talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves. And in order to help me break down everything to do with the Minnesota Timberwolves, I'm joined by the one and only Professor Driz, Andre Snellings. Andre, how are you going?
I'm doing good. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you on after an inordinate amount of time of trying to figure out this technology and get us online. We're finally here. We're ready to go, and we're ready to talk some Timberwolves. And I'm ready to talk after earlier today. Me and Mark Roberts today a 4.5 hour podcast breaking down a dynasty auction. So yeah. Ready to go. After that it was a real. If anyone listened to that podcast, please let me know if you listened all the way through, because recording it for 4.5 hours was tough enough, let alone listening to it. So I do applaud you if you got through all those 4.5 hours. But Dre, before we talk anything further, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Professor Driz. That's at Professor DRZ. That's my Twitter handle, and come holler at me.
Go ahead and follow Andre over on Twitter. Now, Andre writes over at RotoWire. Have you got any articles coming out soon or anything that's been recently published?
Yeah, I've had kind of a off-season series, I guess. I wrote a couple articles about the rookies, what we saw in Vegas. I wrote about the veterans, the changed teams, and kind of the injury situation was my last article. And then I've got some coming up soon where I'm going to talk about the projections of what we think the different players are going to do, broken down by division. So be on the lookout for that.
Cool. Make sure you're checking out the stuff that Andre is putting out over on RotoWire. Now, we're talking Minnesota Timberwolves. Dre, a team that's close to your heart. They were bad last year, but they weren't bad where you go, this is all lost, and we don't see any brightness or anything like that, because they were bad. They had the worst record in the NBA, but it was a good worst record in the NBA, if that makes any sense, because you got a lot of young players, you got themselves a first pick, and there's a ton of promise here. So, I think that you can pretty much, if you're a Timberwolves fan, you can stomach it and go, that was horrible. And yes, we haven't made the playoffs forever, but finally, there's a light starting to shine. This team undoubtedly got better this offseason. How do you see them looking at? Are they? I know they're in the Western Conference. What do they push for? 30 wins? Do they push for 35? Where do they sort of fit?
Yeah, it's interesting, and you have to take everything I say about this with a grain of salt, because as you said, the Timberwolves now are close to my heart. I'm a big Kevin Garnett fan, so I've been accused of not being able to be completely unbiased in the past. I know, shocking, but. I look at it like this. 2 years ago, when everyone on that team was healthy, this is when Kevin Love was still there, they were essentially a 500 team. They were 40-42. Then last year they lost Love, but also they had major injuries. Ricky Rubio was hurt. Just the team probably only had their intended starting lineup for maybe 10 games out of the year. Pekovic was hurt. They were starting a rookie in Wiggins. So this year, they have their unit back. Everyone is healthy, including Rubio, who's their point guard. They brought in the OG, the veteran. Kevin Garnett is there to kind of help provide some stability. And they brought in the number one overall pick, as well as Belka, who, is another overseas player who's supposed to be doing pretty good. I probably butchered his name.
I'm glad that you had problems with that, because that's the name that's always – I had to have specific lessons in Serbian to get that name right, Dre, because I could not do it. And I'll tell you, this is the advice that I got from the numerous people and Serbians who were listening to the podcast that told me his name rhymes with pizza and his name's Bielica.
Whoa.
Bielica. It rhymes with pizza. Don't forget that one. I'll never forget it now, because I'm normally pretty okay with names, but I struggled really, really badly with that one until I got a dressing down from a few Serbians. They told me the way it needs to be done, and that little tip, it really helped me. So, rhymes with pizza.
Yeah, I was about to say, I will remember that now. Bielica.
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 They also brought in a couple of other veteran guys as well, Tayshaun Prince and Andre Miller. came in. They brought in their 170 years of NBA experience. They came across, and Damian Rudez came across as well. I think he's an interesting player. I don't like that they gave up Chase Budinger, but Rudez is an interesting player. I don't really see how he fits into this rotation really at all, considering he's a stretch four and they've got about seven big men already that are going to get minutes ahead of him. Same with Miller and Prince. Well, I don't know where they really fit. They're more locker room guys than going to provide anything on the court.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what they are. You know, KG is a locker room guy who's still going to start. You know, I think at the very least, he's still going to get the 20 minutes or so he's been getting the last few years. And I wouldn't actually be surprised if that bumps up a little bit if the team is being successful. But at the least he's going to spend some time on the court. I think Andre Miller and Tayshaun Prince, I don't see a lot of time for them. I think Miller's at best maybe the third point guard. He may get some time if Rubio gets hurt again. But other than that, I think he was really brought in more to, you know, give that veteran presence. They have now a point guard, a wing, and a big man who, as you said, between them have about 75 years of NBA experience. And I think, you know, that they have a team now with three straight number one overall picks. We always forget about Anthony Bennett and a lot of really young guys, you know, a lot of guys who were just born when, you know, Miller and KG and even Prince were coming into the NBA. So I think they want the vets to help show the young guys the way.
I think that's exactly right. And you're right. They cover everywhere. Point, wing, and bigs. Prince and Miller are going to have no impact in fantasy leagues this year because even if Rubio was to go down, then Tyus Jones is there and Zach LaVine is there. And then Miller moves into maybe a 15-minute of the game role. And Tayshaun Prince, if Andrew Wiggins goes down, they're going to push Shabazz Muhammad there. And then Prince goes into a more of a backup role. So they're all third string guys. Rudez, again, I mentioned there's just so many guys in that front court. We're not going to really see him play at all this year. And even the guys that they lost this offseason, yeah, Chase Budinger was really, really good down the stretch last season. I talked about him at length on the Pacers podcast. I think he's a really, really good player. I reckon the Pacers got a bit of a steal in that deal. But he was going to be buried for minutes here. And Gary Neal, again, this team was so ravaged by injuries that the amount of guys that were out, that they were playing guys, Neal had to play a big role, and he just wasn't going to play one on this team moving forward. So the guys that left, the guys that arrived in terms of non-draft picks, not a huge impact. But where this team really is focused, especially from a fantasy point of view, is from the young players on this team. There's, you know, we can talk about their value for dynasty leagues, but it's not just dynasty leagues. They're going to have impact this season. So let's start at the top with the two of the number one overall picks that are on this team. Andrew Wiggins, he was the rookie of the year last season. His fantasy season wasn't as good as what a rookie of the year you expect. He finished outside the top 100 in season-long value. He had some good stretches. He had some horrible stretches. He played a metric shit ton of minutes. I don't know if he's going to play that same amount down the stretch than what he played last year because, you know, guys like Shabazz Muhammad is back. Ricky Rubio is back. He's still going to play 36 minutes a night. I don't think he's going to be playing the 40, 41, 42 minutes he was playing in the last couple of months of the season. And to me, his fantasy value is not, it's okay. But I don't see him being a really great fantasy option, to be honest. He's being drafted currently at pick 60. Yeah, he could take a leap to get to pick 60, but I don't like him at that pick. I think that's ceiling for him. I don't see him being a top 50 player this season. I think that his game, as good as it is, I don't know how well it translates to fantasy. If he starts hitting threes, maybe. And look, he hit him at 17%, and a lot of young guys, you know, do struggle with their threes. I'm still not buying into it at pick 60. It feels like a little bit of an investment in a redraft league for Wiggins. How do you see him?
Yeah, I could agree with that. So there's a couple things. Last year, he was a rookie. Like you said, they played him crazy minutes, and everybody else was hurt, so they got to really feature him. His game, as you said, where he produces is not super fantasy friendly, you know, with rotisserie leagues, especially you want to see a guy that's good at threes or steals or blocks, you know, something. Yep. Or else he needs to be like a 20-10 guy with either rebounds or assists. And, Wiggins, if he gets the minutes, I mean, he'll probably be up around 20 points, but he doesn't crash the boards a lot. He doesn't, initiate a lot, so he doesn't get many assists. And, you know, as you said, he doesn't really hit the threes. So, unless his game really evolves from his rookie season to his sophomore year, this year he'll be playing a lot more off of, you know, Ricky Rubio. So if, you know, maybe he could pick up that corner three, which is, you know, supposed to be the most efficient shot in basketball. If he's not having to attack off of the dribble from like the elbows, maybe he can bump up that 3-point percentage and get up to around a three per game. That would really help him. But as you said, he's definitely not a fantasy sure thing. And so I think if you're talking pick number 60, that's the fifth round. I don't think I would pick him quite that early. Or if so, it would be like the back of the fifth round and I'd be hoping. I would probably be more interested in him around round 7 or 8. If he ever made it that far.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's when I say that I don't like certain players for fantasy, that's exactly what I'm trying to get at, is that he's fine, but I think that at that point, he's not what I would want to do at that point. At pick 80, then I'm happy with it. Like, I think that's really, you know, 75 even. But once we get to 60 or even inside the top 50, which you may see at some stage, I'm not sure I really buy it. I'm not sure I'm really getting involved in it. You can have as much faith in him as you want and you want to go early, but just remember, you could go early and pick him at pick 45, and that might be great. He might end up as the top 45 player. He might end up as the 45 ranked player, and you go, Josh, you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. I picked him at 45 and he ended up at 45, but the risk reward for that is not high. If you take a guy at 45 and his best case scenario is 45, that's not a good idea to me. You want to take a guy at 45 whose best case scenario is 20, and I don't think that's where Wiggins can do, or even his best case scenario is 20. Look, if you take him at 45, you want to go the over under for him is 45, where he could be 25, he could be 65. Not like best case 45, average 65, worst case 85. You don't want to be in that range. That's how I look at it anyway. I don't want everything to have to go right for him to reach that potential, because we know in the NBA that the amount of times that everything goes right is very low on. So I don't love him that high. Karl Anthony Towns is being picked at pick 68. I don't know how to feel about that. I've said this in so many podcasts. I just don't know about the minutes. I've got him currently at 29 minutes, but there's a lot of guys in that front court. How do you see this front court breaking down, and how do you see Karl Anthony Towns? Because we talk about Wiggins not having necessarily a really fantasy-friendly game. Karl Anthony Towns, he can have a very fantasy-friendly game. He can be Anthony Davis light in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. So Towns, yeah, it's always hard to project a rookie, but from everything I'm seeing, everything I'm hearing, he's expected to be the starter. And you said 29 minutes is a conservative estimate for a starter. Even as a starting big man, you know, 29 minutes, that's very reachable. Like you said, if you go with the bell curve, that would be up towards the top of the bell as far as likelihood. So then you start talking about, well, what will he produce while he's out there? I don't think he's going to come in and be like a mega scorer, but, he could flirt with a double-double on pretty much any given night, points, rebounds. And he's a solid defensive player. So he could be the type that averages more than a steal and more than a block a game, which is valuable in rotisserie. So, you know, pick 68, we're talking picking him, would it be midway through the sixth round, mid to late sixth round? I think I would probably be more likely to do that than I would Wiggins. Think, you know, Wiggins is more established at this point, but as you just got done detailing, unless he takes a mega scoring hike, unless he gets up to like 25 points a game or really starts hitting the three, and both of those are ifs, you know, the upside isn't quite there. Whereas Towns, he's not going to be Anthony Davis this year, but as you said, he could be in a few years. And, you know, a guy averaging 13 and 8 with a steal and a block, the center eligible is, you know, that's got value in leagues. So I think I'm happier with his range. I still maybe would be a little bit more conservative, but I would be happier with that range than I would be with Wiggins.
Well, over at Basketball Monster, Towns is projected at 11 and 8 with half a steal and two blocks. And that puts him ranked, you know, 76 overall for 8-cat value. And, you know, when I look at my head-to-head sort of value, puts him right at 70. So that's pretty much right on that average draft position, because he's not going to have to score a lot. He got two blocks, half a steal, eight rebounds, and really good percentages as well. You know, a better field goal percentage and a really high free throw percentage as well. Yeah, I think he's going to be an interesting player. Again, people are going to reach on him, and reaching inside the top 60, again, I don't know if he's going to be able to provide top 60 value. I think you're going to need to wait until in the 60s range. But in a dynasty, it really depends on how you're going to look at it. I think we see him out of the top 60 this year. We see him inside the top 40 of the next season, inside the top 20 the year after, and then potentially a top 10 player by his fourth season. It's potential, and there's a risk there. I wouldn't ever suggest taking him inside the top 10 in a dynasty league, because again, you have to wait 4 years for him to really get to that level. And are you sacrificing a first round pick for 4 years? I don't know, but he has a very good fantasy game. Yeah, he's going to be a player who can be points, rebounds, steals, blocks, both percentages. We saw his passing on show in Summer League. We were sitting there watching him going, well, wow, look, this guy can see the court brilliantly, and he can hit threes potentially. So he could be a contributor in legitimately every category. And even if you're counting nine categories and turnovers, he's not going to be a high turnover guy. So there's a chance he's a real contributor across all nine categories. The problem is going to be with him this year in getting the 29 minutes is fouls. He has a high propensity to accumulate fouls, and that might limit his minutes. And the fact that there's so many other guys there, they don't need to play him. They don't need to get out there and go, well, you got to play through all these fouls because there's so many guys. Or they might just say, play through them and foul out, and we've got someone to replace you. And that might limit his minute upside as well, I think.
Yeah, I can see that. And, one thing to kind of keep in mind, the Timberwolves, well, with Flip Saunders, he's having some health issues. So we don't really know for sure how his offense and Sam Mitchell's offense might differ. But if the default is that they're going to play the Flip Saunders offense, that offense is extremely friendly to versatile big men, as far as, his opportunities to maybe get some assists. Flip runs a lot of high low sets, a lot of big men posting up at the elbow and making decisions. So if that is the offense that they run, then your points about Towns' passing ability really kind of come into the equation.
Because his passing was elite for a big man and for a guy of his size and his age. It was really impressive to see. Let's talk about some of the other young guys on this team. Zach LaVine was phenomenal down the stretch last year, but much like with Wiggins to an extent, he was just playing so many minutes that the situation for him to play 44 minutes a night, it's not going to be there. So he's not going to be able to put up the sort of numbers that he was putting up. And look, in the last month of the season, he was averaging 19 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, half a steal, 1.7 threes. But he was playing 38 minutes. Now he's not going to play 38 minutes here. Ricky Rubio's back. He's going to start. Kevin Martin is going to be the starting shooting guard. As much as people hate Kevin Martin, he's going to start. LaVine is going to get time backing up both of those guys, but I don't think they're going to want to run him too much as a point guard. Do you see him being projected more as a point guard or a two guard, considering they drafted Tyus Jones?
No, definitely a two guard. I think last year he got time at the point guard by default, and because they wanted him to get minutes. They wanted to see, it was a lost season. Let's play these rookies. Let's see what we have with them. But LaVine, he's not a natural point guard. He could maybe be a lead guard, but he's not a point guard. So on this team moving forward, they want him to be a two. I don't even know if they want him to be a combo. I think they want him to be a two. They're hoping that Jones comes in, is able to take over those backup, point guard minutes. And as we talked about, they have Dre Miller now as the third string. So, I think it's pretty clear they're pushing Jones more towards the wing. If it goes the way they want it to go.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what they want to do is they want to play him on the wing, and Tyus Jones is going to be the backup point guard at some point. Like LaVine will play a little bit there early, Andre Miller will play a little bit until Jones gets acclimatized to the role. But LaVine, I'm going to talk about him a little bit later, but he's not going to have that same value that he had last year. I'm a big fan of Tyus Jones. I love what they did in getting him. I don't think that means anything in terms of Rubio's future. We've heard of these rumors that Rubio is going to get traded. I don't think anything to worry about there, but I do like Tyus Jones for dynasty purposes. And what about Adrian Payne, the other first-round pick on this team, who, again, is part of that crowded front court? They gave up a first-round pick to get Adrian Payne. What do you think of him? Now, he looks older than both you and me combined, and he's about 22. He looks like a grizzled veteran out there, which he's not. What do you think? Has he done anything to show you any sort of ability to be an NBA quality player?
Well, yeah, so a couple things. Adrian Payne does have that LeBron James, Greg Oden gene. You know, he looked like he's ready to retire when he came out of high school.
He looks like Greg Oden's
speaking
dad.
Of high school. Yeah, and see, I have a predilection towards being a fan of his because he's from my hometown, okay. You know, Dayton, Ohio represent. So because of that, you know, I've always looked at him fondly, and then he went to Michigan State, which is just up the road from where I am now. So I'm glad to see he's in the pros and doing well. Unfortunately for him, as you pointed out, Minnesota has about 8 power forward eligible players that all will get minutes. So from a fantasy perspective, I don't really see what Payne is going to be able to contribute this year there's too much. There's KG is going to get his 20 minutes, at least those 60 games out the year. We've got, all right, let me try it again. Bielitsa.
Yes.
He's going to get his run. Anthony Bennett has been a disappointment as a number one pick. And there are thoughts that maybe he's not in the Timberwolves future at all, but he's in the decision year, from his, number one overall pick contract. And he's at least something of an asset. So you would think that Minnesota would want to get him some minutes, even if it's just to try to bump up his trade value. There's, you know, Rudez. Even Shabazz Muhammad played a little bit of four last
definitely.
Year. So it's like, with all of that said, I just really don't see, and I think they're going to possibly get some 4 minutes out of Jang this year. So I don't see where Payne gets enough minutes to be a fantasy presence. He could get enough minutes to show Minnesota's brass that he's a part of their future. And to, you know, play hard on the court and produce on the court. But I don't see any way he gets more than 20 minutes max, unless there's mega injuries. And so, you know, so fantasy wise, he's not really on my radar.
Even in a deep league or a dynasty league, I don't know how much relevance he has, because these other guys, look, they got, you're young. Yeah, Bielitsa is not that young, but he's relatively young. He's a rookie.
He's the NBA.
Jang is young. Towns is young. Muhammad is young. All these guys are really young. And Payne is right down on the bottom of the totem pole from those guys. Now, what about breakout players? Dre, who do you see as a guy that is in line for a breakout sort of season?
Yeah, it's interesting. Because I don't know if you would count him as a breakout because he's a veteran, but I think Ricky Rubio has the potential to really see his game go up with the team as it is now. Rubio's big weakness is his shooting. And because of that, he's never been able to score the way you would want him to. But even on top of that, his assist, like his whole game was kind of up and down. Because if defense is set up to stop him, he didn't have the scoring threat to work around that. But this year, you're looking at a situation where all four other Timberwolves starters are going to be able to not only score, but shoot, you know, so the entire defense could kind of be opened up, you know, get a really nice spacing effect for a penetrator like Rubio. And so I think not only might his assists go up, but, you know, his entire game might rise. His scoring by efficiency especially, but maybe even by volume might improve because the defense just won't be able to concentrate on him at all.
That's a really good point. I didn't have him down as my breakout guy. I did have him down as being a fantasy draft sleeper, so I'll talk about that now as well, because he's currently being drafted at pick 72. And if you're in a head-to-head league, that is a massive, massive bargain. Like, it is a huge bargain. You're talking about a guy that could be a 2-steal, 9-assist sort of guy. He can get you over half a three a game, really good free throw percentage, you know, aggressive rebounding numbers for a guard as well. He was over 5.5 a game last season. And I do think there is still room for him to grow. I think that he is significantly underrated. You probably have to punt field goal percentage, but it's not completely you know, unrecoverable from. And if you have him on your team, it probably is. And I would definitely be looking to punt field goal percentage if I had him, and I'd probably want to avoid him in a roto sort of format. But in a head-to-head league, punt the field goal percentage, pair him with someone, you know, one of those high volume guys in your first round. If you pick Russell Westbrook, you're getting a very high usage, you know, low percentage field goal guy. You pair him there, and your assist numbers are locked up. You're getting big steal numbers. I think that he's in for a really good season. And people are very down on Ricky Rubio, and I know the shooting's bad, but he's not necessarily a bad shooter. He's a bad finisher. His percentage from three, last season was not good, 26%, but he hit 33% of his shots from three last year. In 2011-12, he hit 34% of his shots. Like, that's a guy who sort of can shoot, and he can hit free throws, so it means he can shoot. And you can't sag off him. You can't leave him alone. Like, Rajon Rondo, Alfred Payton, you can leave them alone from three, and they're not going to hit him. Rubio actually can hit them, and he provides some value out there. So I don't think that things are lost for him. As a breakout guy, I've got Wiggins there because, look, there is a massive chance he takes a big step and does become that you know, awesome all-star level talent. I think it's probably unlikely, but he's the guy that I look at in this team that could have this huge jump. And we talk about Wiggins enough, I think, for the time being. What about a sleeper for you? Like, I've got Rubio as my guy because I said pick 72 is just way too low in my opinion. Who do you see as a bit of a sleeper in this team?
All right, you know, for those of you that have paid attention to me for a long time, I've got a shocker for you. My sleeper is Kevin Garnett. Just for the simple fact that, you know, 2 years ago, say 2013.
Yep.
He and Tim Duncan were playing on the same level, as far as fantasy production. And they had been their whole careers. They're born a month apart. You know, there was nothing, physically that I ever heard that would say that, hey, KG needed to go from, you know, playing 30 minutes a game in Boston in 2013 to 18 minutes a game in Brooklyn the next year. Except for that he went to Brooklyn. It was a new situation, new environment. And, you know, it didn't work out for him there. I know it's 2 years later, but I always just look at Duncan as the template for what I could expect from Garnett in the right situation. He's back home now. First Flip was going to be his coach, who was, you know, his coach through his glory years. And now if Flip is out, Sam Mitchell is his coach, who was his teammate during his early years, who, you know, has always been like his mentor. So, again, it's possible that he's still an 18 to 20 minute guy this year, that they just have him out there for ceremonial reasons. But I would be maybe the only person in America not surprised if he's more like a 26 minute a game type guy, which, since his per minute stats never really went down, would put him on the back end of fantasy relevance. He would be a center eligible player that would be able to average, you know, around double digit points, you know, 7-8 rebounds. He's the type that always contributed across the board except for threes. And if his minutes go back up into the 26 to 28 range, then all of a sudden he's a lot more roto relevant. So he's calling him a deep sleeper, but he's my sleeper.
Well, you're touching on his per 36 numbers. Like last season, he was still at 12 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 1.5 steals, half a block, and really good percentages. And you're right that his numbers haven't really changed much over the past 4 or 5 years. His rebounding ability had actually gone up in the limited minutes. He's actually grabbing more rebounds than what he was before on a per possession basis. So there is something there. I don't know if he's going to be able to get minutes because of the other guys around him. Maybe if there was in a situation where they didn't have four other, you know, starting caliber players in that front court, then maybe he might be forced into that. Injuries, again, can happen. It might happen to him, but it might happen to someone else. It might be Gorgui Dieng. It might be Towns that suffers something. It might be, you know, Bielitsa that suffers an injury, and he's forced into a bigger role. And if he is, then you can't ignore him. You definitely can't ignore him. If he is forced into a bigger role, he is still going to produce. I've got no doubt about that. And yeah, he's someone to definitely watch out for. What about as an overvalued player heading into drafts? I've got a couple here on my list. I'll let you go first, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, like you said, we've talked a lot about Wiggins. And you know, he was kind of your breakout guy because he has potential. But for me, he's a little bit overvalued because his name and his rookie of the year credentials, I think, make people believe that he's going to be a fantasy star. And as we said, I don't know if his game, you know, matches up with that.
Yep.
Like, even if he improves as he should, I don't know if his game matches up with that. So I have him as a little bit overvalued. I have Zach LaVine as a bit overvalued, yep, again, for some of the reasons you pointed out, just minutes wise. You know, I don't see him. He's a sixth man now, essentially. And I don't even know that he'll be like a high minute sixth man, you know, which means if he's in the 24 minutes per game range, he doesn't have the kind of game that makes him ultra valuable in those minutes. So I kind of have him as overvalued. And I guess it depends on what you're expecting. I mean, Shabazz Muhammad jumped on the scene as like a breakout sleeper last year. But I think, again, it was because of minutes and situation. So I don't see him getting those types of minutes this year. So if you were expecting him as to be your sleeper, then I could see him as overvalued as well.
Okay. Look, I had three names down. One of them was Andrew Wiggins, because as much as I think he could be a breakout, pick 60 is too high for me. Zach LaVine, he's being drafted at pick 137. That is too high for me. I've got him currently projected at 23 minutes a game, and that puts him at 10 points, 2.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, and that's not enough to provide value for the pick 137. He needs to get 30 to 32 minutes to have real fantasy value, and which he did last season. And I see that this season is... I have him sort of in a similar situation to Jordan Clarkson, is that they were fantastic down the stretch, but their second year is going to be worse, not due to their play, more to do with their situation. The other guy I had down, Dre, was Nikola Pekovic is being drafted at pick 114, and that needs to stop. I don't know why he's being... Look, he's going to play 50 games max. We don't know when he's going to come back. These ankles are screwed. They're never going to be fine. He had Achilles surgery, which is impossible to come back for so many guys. He's already brittle. He's going to play max 20 minutes a game. He's going to play max half the games in this season. I don't know why you're bothering with him. And even when he played last season, look, he's a terrible fantasy player. Even when he plays, his points, his rebounds, and that's it. You get no assists. And when I say no assists, you get like half an assist. Look, less than half a block, less than half a steal we're talking about. And even last year, his field goal percentage, which is one of his strengths, was down at like 43%, and that was horrific for a center. He just shouldn't be drafted. I'm so anti Nikola Pekovic from fantasy. He gives you nothing, no defensive numbers whatsoever, points and rebounds, and he can't stay healthy. So if you're drafting Nikola Pekovic at 114, please tell me why, and please stop, because it doesn't need to be done.
This was a public service announcement.
Exactly. Just heed. If you're going to heed one piece of advice, do not draft Nikola Pekovic. It's just not going to work out well for you. Even if you're talking about a dynasty league, this guy's done. He's fried. And now he's going to go out there and be a 20 and 10 guy and be an all-star this season for sure. But he's done. He's finished. I'm fairly confident in that. What about a perfect situation sort of guy, Dre, a player who's limited by his playing time? So if he was getting big minutes, he's going to be a real fantasy relevant guy. We highlighted LaVine. Is there anyone else on this team that you think fits that situation?
Yeah, I would say Georgie Jang. They might lead the NBA in difficult to pronounce names, but you know, he's shown each of the last 2 years when Pekovic got injured that he was able to come in and produce fantasy numbers. His real life value is a little bit in question. You know, he was drafted as a defense first guy, and in real life, his defense has not been what it was projected to be because his positioning's not great. He goes for too many up fakes, but fantasy wise, that's perfect because he's going for those up fakes because he's trying to block shots, you know, so he's able to be in the mix. You know, he's able to produce defensive numbers. He's able to grab some boards. You know, he can score in double digits for you. His shooting percentage isn't bad. So, I feel like if something were to happen to Towns and as you said, Pekovic, I don't anticipate a minute from him. I mean, I know he's going to play some, but in my mind, I don't even really think about him as an option on this team. So if something were to happen to, Towns, I could see Dang becoming, you know, very fantasy relevant.
And look, if he is out there and playing 30 plus minutes, he's a top 50 fantasy guy. I've got him currently at 27 minutes. He's being drafted at pick 112. So if he plays 27 minutes, he's a top 80 sort of player. So I think anywhere you grab him inside the top 100 is fine. He's not going to be a big scorer, but big rebounds are a huge possibility. Good steals, good blocks. He's a good percentage guy. I do really like Gorgie Jing. I think he's a really good piece for them for the future as well. And you're right, he fits into that situation perfectly, that if something goes wrong and if Garnett gets healthy, that they could try and run a situation where they put Jing and Towns on the floor together, because they both can not necessarily stretch the floor, but they can get out there and hit jumpers. They're not Jahlil Okafor, where every shot has to be from inside the paint. They can get out there and actually hit a jumper, yeah, hit some face-up shots, that sort of thing. They're both pretty good shooters, especially from the free throw line, so, as big men.
Yeah, the Timberwolves have kind of a unique situation going. We were talking about kind of the outlook of their team in general, and I think that does kind of reflect on their fantasy outlook. The NBA these days is moving towards smaller and smaller teams, you know, the small ball lineups, the fours that can shoot, you know, the fives that can shoot. Well, with Minnesota, you're getting some of those small ball benefits. You know, all of their big men can shoot at least out to, if not out towards the 3-point line. They all can pass. So they're all kind of small ball type, offensive threats, but they're all like 7 feet tall, which means that, you know, they can give you those benefits while still being able to crash the boards, get some block shots. And I think as a team, that gives them a lot of upside, that maybe you don't expect from a team that only had like 17 wins the year before. But from a fantasy perspective, it gives them upside too, because as the other teams are going smaller and smaller, you know, Minnesota could run out a team with 2 7-footers on the floor at all times and still be able to match up with those, kind of small ball lineups. So, I like the potential of their big men in mass. It's just kind of the question, as we've alluded to, of how the minutes are going to be distributed.
They're in an interesting situation with their big men. I really like what they're doing. But in terms of these perfect situation type of guys, Zach LaVine is one of those players that if he gets 30 minutes. Nemanja Bjelica, if he plays 30 plus minutes, I think he's going to be Nikola Mirotic style a player. He's going to put up some really big numbers, but he's going to be buried for a lot of the season. There's a lot of guys on this team. You know, if Tyus Jones got a starting role, he's going to be a guy that could approach, you know, 7-8 assists a game, much like LaVine did towards the end of last season. There's lots of guys on this team, and this team's gone from, you know, the worst team in the NBA to being a team with significant depth and a whole heap of young, exciting players, and that's obviously awesome for them that there's just so many guys around here. Kevin Martin, we haven't spoken about him. He is not well respected, I think, amongst fantasy people. People just go, oh, Kevin Martin, geez, seriously, why is this guy still here? He's going to get traded. Maybe he does, but if he doesn't get traded, he's going to play 30 minutes. He's going to be the starting shooting guard. He's going to lead the team in scoring or be pretty close to it. He's going to be an elite source of threes. He's going to be able to get you fantastic free throw percentage on high volume, and one of those guys you can get late in the draft that can actually affect your team's free throw percentage. You might be able to get a guy who shoots 90% at the end of a draft, but he'll have one attempt. Kevin Martin, on the other hand, he'll go out there and have 5 attempts, 6 attempts a game, and that can actually have a real positive impact on your free throw percentage. What do you see from him? Do you see him being marginalized at all, or is he still going to be full steam ahead as the, you know, the main, him and Wiggins as the main scorers?
I think he's going to be full steam ahead as one of the main scorers. And the reason I think this, and we've kind of tiptoed around it a bit in this podcast, but I do not think the Timberwolves organization sees themselves as a typical lottery, we're coming off the bottom type team. I think they see themselves as a team that may even be able to challenge for the playoffs this year. And with that said, I don't think they're going to just run out the young guys and try to get them minutes unless there are injuries, you know, the way they did last year. I think a starting lineup, you know, with Ricky Rubio, who's a young vet, but he's a vet at point guard, with Kevin Martin at the two, he's an established NBA, he's a professional scorer, you know, in baseball, they talk about a professional hitter. He's a professional scorer. You know, you got, you know what I'm saying, the reigning rookie of the year at small forward. You've got the oldest man in the world as your starting power forward, but he is a former MVP. And then you got Karl Anthony Towns, who'll be the young guy on the squad, but has a game that could come in and play right now. I think that's a starting five that in Minnesota is believed to be competitive with pretty much anyone in the league. And because of that, I think that Kevin Martin is going to get his run. I think, you know, that starting five, everyone has strengths and weaknesses. And you've got two big men that can both score and shoot and pass from the perimeter. But neither one of which I don't believe will be heavy volume scorers. And Ricky Rubio is not a heavy volume scorer. So that leaves Wiggins and Martin to be the 20 point per game threats from the wings. And I think that's what they're looking for him to be. And if that's what he is, as you pointed out, to me, the free throw thing is the most underrated thing. It's easy to see threes and yeah, you know, the threes will rise you up anybody's ranking list really fast. But if you can get a guy who 5-6 free throw attempts a game, he's shooting 90% from the line, he can cover up some weaknesses you have from the line from other players. So, yeah, I fantasy wise, I'm higher on Kevin Martin than I am as a real player this year.
Yeah, definitely. Kevin Martin's been picked at pick 89. I think that he's probably about 10 spots higher than that. But what I want to really point out with the free throw percentage is Andrew Wiggins, okay, he's currently projected at 78% on 6 attempts, the way I've got him projected, or got him projected at Basketball Monster. Kevin Martin's at 87.8% on 4.6 attempts. Now, the difference between that in terms of impact is, I'm trying to put it into, it's 5 times as impactful to have Kevin Martin on your team than Andrew Wiggins. You know, talking about standard scores, or Z scores, or Z scores for you guys. Andrew Wiggins is at 0.24 for his free throw, and that takes into account volume and percentage, 0.24. Kevin Martin is at 1.33. Like, that can bring you out of a hole. Like, it can't bring you out of an Andre Drummond hole. It can't bring you out of a DeAndre Jordan hole. But it can bring you out of a, well, as I said, there's no one on this team who's really a bad free throw shooter, but you can combine Kevin Martin with James Harden, and then you actually can cover Jahlil Okafor in that situation. You can get a positive influx. He's, Okafor's a bad shooter, but he's not like those other guys. And Martin, high volume, high percentage, it's very, very important. And then you add his high scoring, high 3 points. He doesn't do a lot else in other areas. There's no big rebounding, no big assists. There's some small amount of steals. But that free throw percentage, it's so hard to get that late in a draft when you can get that around pick 80 for a guy who's going to give you that 1.33 Z score sort of amount. It's massively impactful. And I think people don't really, really pay attention to that because, you know, percentages don't really, they're harder to understand because it's efficiency and it's volume, that it's two factors in it. But his number there, it's the next closest guy in terms of impactfulness on this team in terms of free throw percentage is Zach LaVine. And he's over double the impact that LaVine has. He's just, like, that sort of number that he puts together is significant for Kevin Martin. So you can't underrate him for that sort of thing. Dre, we're up to the funner part of the, it's all been fun, but this is the bit where we're not really talking a huge amount of fantasy. We want to talk about favorite players on this team. And with you, it feels a little bit obvious who it's going to be. I'm going to say, who's your favorite player on this team and who's your favorite all-time player on this team? And it's the same guy, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is. there's no drum roll necessary. I mean, Kevin Garnett's my favorite professional athlete, you know, and I beat the drum for a long time on different places as far as just historical relevance. I think he's probably one of the more underrated players I've ever seen. I mean, I think from every, you know, you talked about Z score, Z score, you know, and kind of the statistical bent that you have to really be good at rotisserie. That same type of mindset gets me really into stats and advanced stats and ways to try to measure a player's impact on the game. And by, you know, every study I've ever seen, the further you look into it, Kevin Garnett is very arguably the best player of his generation, you know, better than Kobe, you know, right there with Duncan, if not better. You know, in kind of the same breaths with the Shaqs and the LeBrons. And casual NBA fans, even most really into it NBA fans, not only would they not agree with that, they probably would kind of look at you crazy if you say it until I force somebody to sit down with me and go through it. And then, you know, people kind of have to at least respect it. So I'm a big Garnett fan. I like that he's able to finish off his career back where he started. You know, whether he's going to be an 18 minutes a game guy or a 26 minutes per game guy, you know, the latter is probably my own wishful thinking, but I would love to see it because I think he's good. And, I'd love to see him finish off on a positive note on a team that's, got some feel good in them. Whereas in Brooklyn the last couple of years, there wasn't a lot of that.
His numbers, when you look at them, they're really like 9 straight seasons of 20 and 10. But you go look at his 2002-2003 season. He averaged 23 points. He had 13.5 rebounds. He averaged 6 assists 1.4 steals, 1.6 blocks. He shot 50% from the field and 75% from the free throw line. He's a guy that was great at field goal percentage, great at free throw percentage, blocks, steals, assists, rebounds, points. He had a stretch of, I'm going to count these up, and this is always great when I count stuff up on air, six straight seasons of at least five assists. And that doesn't happen from any big man like that. And combined, he's a 20-10-5 guy for six straight seasons. That is incredible. And over a steal and over a block a game. Really, look, amazing numbers. And people may not appreciate just how good he was, you know, back 10, 12 years ago, whenever it was. He was putting together some, a massive stretch of just incredible seasons. And he was, fantastic. And I can't blame you for saying he's your favorite player on this team now and for all time. My favorite player currently on this team is Ricky Rubio. I've touched on him before. I'm firmly in camp Rubio. I think he's a really, really good player. I love watching him play. I love his highlights. I love his passing. I love his defense. I wish that shooting would just improve slightly. But again, he's not a terrible shooter. He's not a good finisher. That's his problem. He's not a terrible shooter, though. His form doesn't look completely broken or anything like that. He's not like Michael Kidd-Gilchrist out there shooting. He actually looks a bit nicer when he shoots. It's more about his finishing, which is terrible. So he's my favorite player on this team. Now, what I've been doing the last couple of podcasts, Dre, is before the show, I tweeted out and get people to guess who my favorite all-time player is for the team. Nobody got it right today. There were a lot of good guesses. My second favorite player on this team all-time is Isaiah Ryder. I prefer to call him J.R. Ryder, but Isaiah Ryder is my favorite guy. A lot of people were guessing Pooh Richardson. There was a couple people throwing out Wally Szczerbiak. There was a Christian Laettner. Someone threw out a Shane Heal and Luke Longley. Shout out to Shane Heal and Luke Longley. Tom Gugliotta was another one that was thrown out there, but it's none of those guys. This one to me is probably the oddest favorite player of all time that I've got on any team. I don't know what it is. It all comes back to your formative years of watching the NBA and just players that sort of stick in your head, whether it be from video games, from basketball cards, from reading magazines, from watching highlights over here. And the guy that's in my head when I think Timberwolves, back when I started watching the NBA, the player that's in my head, Dre, is the Rifleman, Chuck Person. I don't know why.
The Rifleman.
I can't explain it. I don't know why, but Chuck Person. When I think Timberwolves, and I go, yep, it's Chuck Person. He's the guy. And his first season in Minnesota was pretty good. He got 17 points, 1.5 threes. He had 5.5 rebounds and 4.5 assists with 0.9 steals. That's not fantastic. And he had some pretty decent seasons in Minnesota as well. A good run of about 5 or 6 straight top 70 seasons. But for some reason, I think Timberwolves. I think Chuck Person. The nickname is huge. I'm big on good nicknames. When I did the Hawks podcast, my favorite player was Stacey Augman because the nickname was fantastic. I'm all in on Chuck Person called the Rifleman. I love the name. Exactly. You can't go past these nicknames. And I don't think there's any sort of nicknames that live up to these levels nowadays. There needs to be more solid nicknames. I'm big fan of Chuck Person. Can't explain it, but that's as close as I can get to explaining it.
See, okay, you got to give me a minute because I have follow-ups from so many different directions on that, and I won't go through all of them because I can see myself going on like a nickname tangent. But before, so Chuck Person.
Yep.
First of all, before you said Chuck Person, when you named all of the potential guys that weren't it, I noticed you didn't say Stephon Marbury, so I thought you were going to say my favorite player is Stephon Marbury. And that was going to throw me because I've never heard anybody say Stephon Marbury is their favorite player. But I was going to have a follow-up because, I don't know how much you know about me, but I went to Georgia Tech.
Yep.
And I went in the class of 95. And so, me, Kevin Garnett, and Stephon Marbury graduated high school the same year. So KG went to the Timberwolves. Marbury came to Georgia Tech. So we were freshmen on campus the same year. And, we were both, I say this almost tongue-in-cheek, but we were both athletes at Georgia Tech. Now, he was the star prize athlete, whereas I was more of the walk-on to the track team. But either way, we would kind of end up being in, athletic housing. I would see the guy. I would interact with him. He was silly to the point of, are you serious? But, he was an interesting guy to be around. And so that's, we talked about me being a Garnett fan. I became a Garnett fan because when Marbury went to the NBA, I followed him to the Timberwolves, who I had no reason to ever pay attention to.
Okay.
And while I was watching him, I would see this 7-foot crazy man jumping around and throwing passes and jumping on the scorer's table and all types of stuff that, that made me end up being a Garnett fan. So that was my Marbury tangent. Even though you didn't say Marbury, I thought it while you were talking.
No, that's,
and then
that's
as far
cool
as Chuck
story.
Person goes, the Rifleman.
That's really interesting. I love it.
Yeah, I have an irrational hatred of Chuck Person. And the reason is because when I was little, you know, Person came into the NBA, he was a rookie in 86.
Yep.
And I was like 7. Actually, I'd have been like 9. Either way, I was little. But my favorite player at the time was, my favorite player was Dr. J. He was retiring. My favorite new young player was Ron Harper, who was in the same draft class with Chuck Person. And Ron Harper is from my hometown. He's from Dayton. He went to school at Miami of Ohio, which was right up the road. We used to go watch him play. And so when he got drafted by the Cavs, who were at least in Ohio, the Pacers, who Person played for, was actually closer physically to where I was from. But, you know, Harper was in Ohio. He was my favorite player. I would stay up, listen to his games on the radio all year. This is back when newspapers were the thing. I would follow his stats in the newspaper. You know, Harper was averaging about 20 points a game. He was like the closest thing that Ohio had to an answer to Michael Jordan. You know, he was exciting. He was my favorite player. He should have been the rookie of the year. They gave it to Chuck Person.
Yeah.
I was so mad that Chuck Person was the rookie of the year that year that I was never able to be a Chuck Person fan. So when you say the Rifleman was your favorite player, I had to laugh out loud at that because I was like, no, he ruined it. He ruined Harper's rookie of the year.
Now I'm going to go on a tangent from there about Ron Harper, because Ron Harper comes to Australia relatively often. I don't really know why, but one of our friends, Andrew Parker, has seen Ron Harper out a few times, and whenever he sees him out, he's seen him out multiple times at bars. He goes up to him and just decides he's always going to start posting him up in a bar. Just goes up to him, backs into him, and starts posting. And Ron Harper's like, what are you doing? So that's a standard thing now. Whenever Pugsy goes and sees Ron Harper out, he goes and posts him up, and he's got a few photos with him. It's Ron Harper doesn't really take too kindly
to
it, but that's my Ron Harper story. So if Andrew's listening, shout out to you to you posting up Ron Harper in Melbourne bars.
That is what's up. That is what's up.
I honestly had no idea this podcast was going to get into that direction, but I'm glad it did.
Yep, you never know where it's going to go. You know, that's what makes it fun.
Exactly. I think we're done there covering Timberwolves. Dre, is there anything you want to add in?
I want to add in, you know, it was great being on here. You know, I had a ball. As far as the Timberwolves go, I can see them challenging for 50 wins this year. Nobody else does. So if it happens, you heard it here first. If it doesn't happen, you'll probably have forgot by the end of the year.
Yeah,
so either way, I'm covered.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Bold statements that people will forget if it doesn't work out. That's pretty bold. 50 wins is pretty bold. But you know what? Anything can happen. It usually doesn't, but it can happen. Let's make sure we're following you on Twitter, Dre. Where can they find you, your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is Professor Drizz. That's Professor DRZ. That same handle on the Instagram, though I'm still relatively new there. And so, yeah, you know, come follow me. Let's have a fun year in the NBA this year.
And for everyone who's not listening in America, that's Professor DRZ, not DRZ. Just get the reverse translation going.
The international audience.
Can't wait for the season to start. Dre, we'll talk during the season, no doubt. Everybody follow Andre. Everyone follow me on Twitter, redrock_bball. Make sure you are subscribing to the podcast on iTunes and leaving a review there, and go and check out what's happening on Basketball Monster and on Hardwood Paroxysm. There's a lot of great stuff happening over there as well. It's always great when you help to support the show and all the endeavors that we're trying to put together. So thank you for everybody who has done that. Make sure you check out the Behemoth podcast that me and Mark Roberts did earlier today. Had to split it into two podcasts. It was so long. It went for 4.5 hours. So I don't blame you if you don't want to listen to all of that, but we did a 400 player deep dynasty auction draft. So basically we gave commentary on every NBA player. Now, Dre, you're well versed in the NBA. Someone got drafted in this draft today. Vasilius Spanoulis. Any idea who that is?
I've seen the name before. I am positive I've seen the name. I could not tell you who he plays for. I could not tell you his position. But I know, I remember, I think I've written that name before. But yeah, that's as close as I can get.
He's a Greek point guard. I don't know. He was drafted in 2004 in the second round, pick 50 by the Dallas Mavericks. It was a weird pick. I don't even know who picked him. They obviously got him for a dollar. The name come up. I'm like, what? Who is this? And he went really quite early. I know it was an auction, but he was nominated quite early. Don't really think he's ever coming over here. He's I'm just reading his Wikipedia at the moment. He's also called the Greek Steve Nash. So there you go. That's something. Don't think we're ever going to see him in the NBA. Yeah. So that's an interesting pick from whoever picked him in that league. But check out that podcast, and you can hear us be slightly bemused when the name Vasilis Spanoulis comes off the board. We're done here. Thank you, Dre, once again. It's been good speaking to you.
All right. Yeah, thanks for having me. Follow me on Twitter. Check out the Hoops Lab on RotoWire. And, go Wolves.
Go Wolves, indeed. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.